Dr. Al-Haryani is chairman of the Preparatory Committee on National Dialogue in Yemen and former Prime Minister of Yemen. Welcome, Dr. Al-Haryani. Yemen faces political fragmentation and a deteriorating security situation. The transition agreement offers an opportunity for national dialogue and a chance to address long-standing grievances and the establishment of an inclusive political compact. What's your assessment of the key challenges Yemen is facing at this moment? And what can the national dialogue and mediation contribute to reverse the precarious situation that Yemen is in?
Thank you very much. I think I myself, as someone who left 2011 and now I live in 2012, I am qualified to make a comparison. Yemen has not really overcome all the crises, all the challenges. But when you look at the situation during 2011 until late 2011 and the situation now late 2012, I think the overall situation has improved. The security situation in the main cities is quite normal. The roadblocks in the capital have been removed. The division of the capital itself during 2011, the south was in the hand of one faction, the north in the hand of another faction. Both factions are almost cousins. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can travel throughout the city without any roadblocks or checkpoints is very, very significant. The economic situation today is the main challenge because it takes quite a time to improve the very dire economic situation. The national dialogue is definitely, I'm expecting, before the middle of next month or around the middle of next month. The preparatory committee, which I chaired, and before that I chaired the contact committee. We worked for 2 months as contact committee to conduct discussions, meetings, with various political factions in order to persuade them to join the national dialogue. Those who agreed to join, more or less all of them, were appointed into the preparatory committee. We worked from last September until yesterday, almost. Before I left, I had signed the accompanying letter to the final report, and it was delivered to the president. The president asked all political parties or stakeholders to deliver the name of their participants by maximum the end of this month. Now, if all participants are submitted by name to the president, I think it will take 2 weeks to convene the national dialogue. The challenge that has not been overcome is to guarantee the participation of the so-called Southern Hirak. Southern Hirak is unfortunately multi-headed, and the street plays and the heads swing, and that is a very difficult situation to convince people to come and participate. There are efforts, international efforts. As a matter of fact, State Minister from London, Alistair Albert, was there the week before this. He came from London specifically to visit the Hirak heads. He went to Aden with the American ambassador, the Russian ambassador, and the lady ambassador of the European Union. They all met with various factions, but unfortunately, despite the long trip he made so far, at least as far as I know, no breakthrough. I think the GCC countries are convening another meeting in Riyadh next week. Secretariat has invited a large number of southerners who live outside Aden, but they will invite also people from Aden and Hadramaut, Mukalla. We will see. I am of the conviction that GCC country leaders are far more influential on the southerners. They can pressure and influence them to participate in the dialogue if they hear a very clear message. If the southerners who will go to Riyadh next week hear a very clear message that They can come, they can say whatever they want, they can discuss all their grievances. And there are grievances, you mentioned that in your questions. But all grievances can be, let's say, ameliorated by sitting together and listening and giving and taking. So that's where we stand.
You actually covered so many points. I'd like to pick up on a few of them. To begin with, though, how was the structure for the national dialogue worked out? For example, the division of seats for the North and the South. And also, there's so many different points that the national dialogue can choose to focus on, security, peace, etc. So how is the aim of it being worked out?
Well, first of all, the number of delegates is 565. 62 of those will be appointed by the president himself, because there are factions that are not politically formed and politically identifiable. But there are personalities, there are some religious group, there are sheikhs, those who must appear in the picture. That will be taken care of by the president. The 500 are divided between 9 factions. I think number one is GPC, General People's Congress. The joint meeting parties, mainly the main three, which is Islah, Muslim Brothers, YSP, the former Socialist Party, which ruled the South before unification, and the Nasrite. Then they have small political parties. They received 4 candidates each. But those three among themselves, together they are more than GPC. The Houthis have their share, which is significant, about 35 candidates, and they just arrived in the scene.
The General People's Congress, which is the former President Saleh's party, that has 112 seats, which is the biggest bloc. Some observers have criticized elements of the former regime and Saleh himself for obstructing the course of a peaceful transition and the workings of the national dialogue. What efforts have been made to address such sources of obstruction?
First of all, let's differentiate between language and action. In language, you hear a lot, which is maybe obstructive. But in fact, in implementing the first phase of the GCC and its implementation program and the military changes that have taken place, which they are significant, and they have targeted forces mainly under the so-called Republican Guard. Yes, they resist for a week, for 10 days, for 3-4 meetings, and they have always given up. Now, that this could be a very strong obstacle to conduct the national dialogue, I don't think so. No one today can obstruct the national dialogue, whether it is the GPC or the Islah or the Socialist. I think the international eyes and ears are very wide open. And gradually now, everyone is realizing to challenge the international community is not that wise. And this is a rare case where the Security Council is unanimous. They have not been unanimous for the last maybe 5 or 10 years.
You mentioned the military, and actually the restructuring of the military is key to the success of the national dialogue. Why would you say that President Hadi has been slow in dealing with this issue?
In the military, there are 2 issues, actually. Around March last year, mid-March, the military split. And the split was down the middle. One cousin of the president in one camp with all his forces, and the camp of the president on the other side. And now the issue, first of all, is unifying the army under a single command as the Minister of Defense and the high command of the president. Some changes have taken place, but I cannot say that the army is fully under the command of the commander-in-chief. That's one issue which I believe soon it will be completed. The question of restructuring takes time. There have been Jordanian and American experts working very hard. Now there is on paper the structure. I believe it will be signed if it has not yet been signed by the president. But implementation will take several months. So to restructure the army will take several months. But to reunify the army in order to split it into different units should be done as soon as possible. The army in Yemen was the strangest army, I think, in the world. The Republican Guard in main force and the so-called 1st Brigade commander. And they are both cousins. So I haven't seen an army like that.
You mentioned Jordan, America, as well as the GCC. I'd like to actually take a step back and ask you how you see the role of external actors, in particular the UN and, again, the Gulf Cooperation Council. And how do regional and international dynamics affect the mediation efforts?
First of all, external actors, let's start with the GCC. The intervention of GCC or the involvement of GCC was an official request from the president and the ministers before the coalition was formed. That means the government of Ali Abdullah Saleh. The foreign minister was in a meeting, was instructed to go and meet with Abdullah bin Zayed and say, we have not been able to reconcile with each other. How about you coming? Because that affects your security and stability, which they gladly accepted, which was unusual for the GCC countries to be directly involved, all of them. One of them could do whatever he wants, like Qatar, but not all of them. So the whole idea was a Yemeni-initiated idea, which eventually produced the GCC initiative. It is just an outline of how peaceful transfer of authority takes place. Just an outline. Then I would say the balking of Ali Abdullah Saleh not to sign in 22nd of May the GCC initiative created a problem that even the UN started feeling that this is very dangerous. Everybody has signed. He was the only one who refused to sign in May 22nd, 2011. There was a decision for a fact-finding mission, then involvement of bin Omar. The implementation unit was one of the reasons that Ali Abdullah Saleh refused to sign. There were two reasons. One reason that the opposition must come and attend, and the opposition had signed already. They refused to attend. So he used that as an excuse. But then he said, this is only an outline. I want an implementation program for the GCC initiative. And that's how the United Nations eventually was involved. So this was a Yemeni initiative again. Nobody came to impose any Yemenis any action. Bin Omar started as a fact-finding mission, then developed ideas on the implementation. That lasted from August until 23rd of November, when all that was signed. In the interim, you know, there was a bombing of the mosque and all those things. I would say initially it was the Yemenis who initiated all these steps. Now, the role of external actors has become very critical, extremely so, in order to maintain the course of development of this peaceful transfer of power. Now, again, it was the government of Ali Abdullah Saleh which was saying the final confrontation between the opposition and the government then was Ali Abdullah Saleh had given up and said, okay, I will give up. I'm not standing in 2013. I will give up even before 2013, provided it is through ballot box. By then, the youth revolution and euphoria and so on, they refused it because they thought that, okay, the regime will fall like it did in Tunisia, like it did in Egypt. But Yemen was quite different. There are two camps, I wouldn't say equally strong, but very strong. And that's why eventually the peaceful transfer of power took place in Yemen, not by external pressure, really. It was also locally generated program, which eventually put the vice president and the first deputy president of the ruling party in position. Therefore, it was not that there was an upheaval that the regime collapsed or disappeared.
You stress the importance of the national dialogue and the initiative being Yemeni-led. What can be done to develop national and local mediation capacities? You already talked about the South and Iraq, but what about the Houthis and the youth groups as well?
In the final document which we submitted to the president, the Iraq, Southerners will be 50% of the 500. If you take the population ratio, difference between South and North is 1-6. But in order to attract the confidence of the South and the Iraq, because there is a difference, not the whole South is Iraq. The share of the Iraq in the 500 is 85. And the rest of the 250 are Southerners, belonging to political parties, independent, and so on. So there are today almost half of the preparatory committee were Southerners. Two of them are Iraq. So the preparatory committee was almost 50-50. The dialogue will be 50-50. The committee which deals with the southern issues is 50-50, 50 from the north, 50 from the south, and the chairman will be a southerner. So all these giveaway positions is in order to convince the south to come in. Now with the Houthis, they are already on board. There is no problem whatsoever. During the contact committees, we flew to Saada and we met with their imam, I will call him, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, and he committed himself to the national dialogue, nominated two in the preparatory committee, and they participated fully. Therefore, there is no problem with Iraq. Youth are 20% of the composition. There are 40 seats for independent youth. But every political party should add up that the national dialogue will be 20% youth, at least, and at least 33% women. Therefore, the composition of the national dialogue is, in my view, very unique, first in the history of Yemen.
For my final question, you talk about the uniqueness of the Yemeni process, but I'd like to zoom out again to the region. Do you think that this is something that could perhaps still be applicable to Syria, for example?
I don't think so. In Yemen, since 1990, every time we had a problem between the ruling party and the opposition, we have gone into dialogue. Sometimes we improve the situation, and sometimes we fail, like 1993, 94. So the dialogue culture in Yemen is a legacy, because even tribal conflicts are resolved by dialogue, culturally. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I think the fertile soil was in the legacy of Yemeni culture to solve problems by dialogue. Syria, we have never heard of something like that. In addition to the nature of the problem, of course, it's not only that Syrians have no, or the regime for the last 40 years never promoted dialogue, but the nature of the problem is far more different.
You mentioned national dialogues in the past and how quite often they've been unsuccessful. What makes this national dialogue different, and how do you think it will succeed this time in Yemen?
First of all, inclusivity is very important. Even the Jews will be represented, and there are only 300 of them left. But they will be represented in the national dialogue. Religious minorities that during the royalist rule were heretic, like the Ismailis, will be represented. There is a small minority in Aden of Iranian Shiite, not Iranian nationality. You know, the type of Shiism in Iran, it's Nashari, we call it. They will be represented. This one is very highly inclusive. including the youth and the women. That's one reason. Third, the ground is being prepared for a major, major change in the constitution, in the form of government, in checks and balances, in equal rights in a more pronounced way. So I'm optimistic because it's different.
Perhaps we should end on an optimistic note. Thank you very much for the interview.
Thank you very much.